and there is none to escape. Your hand will be lifted up against your adversaries, and all your enemies will be cut off. So here we see this idea of God through the prophets promising the Messiah to come, come forth from the city area of Bethlehem, and again the siege and what is to come with the Assyrian Empire. And then also in the 7th chapter of Micah, beginning at verse 8 through 14, here he talks about the fall as Assyria comes upon them. I'll just read verse 12 here to speed it up. It says, "It will be a day when they will come to you from Assyria and the cities of Egypt, from Egypt even to the Euphrates, even from sea to sea and mountain to mountain, and the earth will become desolate because of her inhabitants on account of the fruit of their deeds." So here's a little bit looking towards the idea of the Assyrian captivity that they were to have through the punishment of God. And then in verses 15 through 20, again of chapter 7, we can see God showing his mercy upon the people at that time. When he says, "As in the days when you came out from the land of Egypt, I will show you miracles. Nations will see and be ashamed of all their might. They will put their hand on their mouth. Their ears will be deaf. They will lick the dust like a serpent, like reptiles of the earth. They will come trembling out of their fortresses. To the Lord our God they will come in dread. And they will be afraid before thee. Who is a God like thee who pardons iniquity and passes over the rebellious act of the remnant of his possession? He does not retain his anger forever, because he delights in unchanging love. He will again have compassion on us. He will tread our iniquities underfoot. Yes, thou wilt cast all their sins into the depths of the sea. Thou wilt give truth to Jacob and unchanging love to Abraham, which thou didst swear to our forefathers from the days of old." So here we can see one of the major points that we can find in the old law as a schoolmaster is God gave us a law, gave the Jews a law to follow at that time. If they followed it, God blessed them. If they didn't follow it, God punished them. So we can see here in Micah, as the nation of Israel and Judah turning from God towards idolatry, he is going to be punishing them through the work of the Assyrian Empire. But it shows that he also has his mercy, and he will have compassion upon the people. So as he judges the people, pronounces a judgment upon them, he also promises the compassion on them. And it's something we can learn today as we live in the New Testament area, is following Jesus' law, what Jesus has to say, what the apostles wrote down for us to look at, to remember the things he said, that we also can be punished through our sin, and we can also find favor through our faithfulness. Yet it's not in such a physical realm as we see in the Old Testament. It's in a spiritual realm. But basically the same thing can occur. And we're not looking towards the promised land on earth. We're looking towards the promise of heaven. So we can learn from the old law about them. In Joel, the second chapter, verses 28 through 32, we find, again, a reading that is familiar to us. It's the same reading Peter told to the saints in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost, when the Spirit came upon them in Acts, the second chapter. Here in Joel 2:28, we can see that prophecy coming about. As Joel the prophet says, "And it will come about after this that I will pour out my Spirit on all mankind, and your sons and daughters will prophesy, your old men will dream dreams, and young men will see visions. And even on the male and female servants, I will pour out my Spirit in those days, and I will display wonders in the sky and on the earth, blood, fire, and columns of smoke. The sun will be turned into darkness, and the moon into blood, before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes. And it will come about that whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be delivered. For on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem there will be those who escape, as the Lord hath said, even amongst the survivors whom the Lord calls." So here's the the prophecy in the Old Testament as it happened from Joel, and Peter makes mention of it and talks about it in Acts, the second chapter also. As the Jews from different nations had come together at that time, they should have been familiar with the old law, familiar with what Joel said, familiar with all of the prophecies. And that's what Peter was talking to them about, is you should know what's happening. This is what the prophet Joel spoke about. And it happened at that time in Jerusalem. So we can see, not only to do God's will, but to be knowledgeable of God's will. And what's the only way we can become knowledgeable of God's will? Anybody? Read the Bible. Read the what He has said, the standard that's set forth. Talks about that in the New Law. I know John somewhat and Paul talking about following the guides. Is Jesus Christ the cornerstone of a building to be built up from there? And to be able to focus and to do what He wanted to say. And another contrast in the Old and New Testament is in Hosea, the fourth chapter. Hosea, as a prophet, speaks to the people in the fourth chapter. I'll just refer to verses 1 and 6 in that reading. In verse 1 of chapter 4 of Hosea, he states, "Listen to the word of the Lord, the sons of Israel, for the Lord has a case against the inhabitants of the land, because there is no faithfulness or kindness or knowledge of God in the land." Here he mentions the idea of they're not faithful or kind, and they have no knowledge. And again in verse 6 of that same chapter of Hosea, he says, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge and also reject you, I will also reject you from being my priest. Since you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children." So here the prophet is speaking towards the people, and their fall is because they don't have the knowledge that they needed. Simply by reading the word and following it. One thing I was thinking of last night is, and all this idea of knowledge and stuff, we never mentions the idea of the wisdom behind the knowledge. Because what they were to do, as mentioned many times in the book of Malachi and such, is they were just going through the motions of obeying the law many times. They had the knowledge, they did this, 2 + 2 = 2, okay, that's it, you know. And they just had, okay, I got to, you know, the Sabbath day, I got to rest, I got to do this, I got to pay my tithes. And the only way they could understand that is to read the book. But wisdom itself does not come from reading. It doesn't come from studying. All this makes us capable of understanding His law and gaining knowledge. But wisdom comes through many times testing ourselves amongst other people and making proper choices from the things that we know that we have the knowledge of. So here he's just simply that idea of the lack of knowledge. Then in the New Testament we find a similar idea in that we've been studying with Mike in 1 John. In 1 John, let's see, the second chapter, verses 3 through 6. Here he talks about this idea of wisdom also. Okay, verses 3 through 6, 1 John. He says, "And by this we know that we have come to know Him, if we keep His commandments. The one who says, 'I have come to know Him,' and does not keep His commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps His word, in him the love of God has truly been perfected. By this we know that we are in Him. The one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner as he walked. So here we can see the keeping his commandments, having the knowledge, the proper knowledge, as John was talking about. And the adversary, what was the main, one of the main adversaries that John was talking about or referring to that we studied? Gnostics? Yeah, Gnostics. The Gnostics, who were teaching something other than what the apostles had taught, other than what Jesus had set forth. So we can see, must keep his commandments, and we know that by following what he has said. Verse 24 in that same chapter, here as John is talking to the people there, as for you, let that abide in you, which you heard from the beginning. If what you heard from the beginning abides in you, you will also abide in the Son and in the Father. So here he just talks about going back what they heard from the beginning and following that. Same with the old law. What did they tell the people of the old law? Go back to the beginning. Go back to the Old Testament and follow those precepts and disregard everything else. But the people were led away by the other nations around them, turning to idolatry after all the things that God had done for them. And they forgot what God had done for them. They forgot about the promise because they didn't remind themselves of it. They didn't teach it. The leadership, the kings, the priests at that time didn't fulfill their job in observing it. In chapter 5 of 1 John, verses 1 through 5, he talks about whoever believes that Jesus is the Christ is born of God, and whoever loves the Father, the child born of him. By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and observe his commandments. For this is the law, love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. For whatever is born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. And who is the one who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of Christ? So there again, the idea of keeping his commandments and observing his commandments that we find in the new law, as the old law was put away. But many of the things from the old law were moved over to the new law. Some of the things, you know, murdering and such and things like that are mentioned. Jesus mentions things. And we see examples of things that had changed from the old law to the new law. And then continuing in John, in the second John, 7 through 11, here we see him getting, John getting a little bit more direct with what he's talking about when he says, for many deceivers have gone out into the world, those who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ is coming in the flesh. This is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch yourselves that you might not lose what we have accomplished, but that you may receive a full reward. Anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. The one who abides in the teaching, he has both the Father and the Son. So here we can see this idea of John talking to them about the idea of doing the proper thing, not bringing somebody else's teaching that is different to them, and the evil deeds that would follow that. And then again, in 3 John, verse 11, here John talking to them says, "Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. The one who does good is God, is of God. The one who does evil has not seen God." So here he's talking about imitating, not to imitate what's evil, but what is good. And basically they were to imitate what the apostles had taught them, what Jesus had taught them, the letters that they had, the examples that they had. That's what they were to follow, not to go off on their own. And so because of that, he pronounces the judgment upon them, that they will be judged if they don't turn back to God. Anybody have any questions or comments, okay? Then we see also, considering the idea of not practicing evil but doing good, and in Galatians, the first chapter. Bring it back. Okay. In Galatians, the first chapter, read verses 6 through 9, and consider what we've been talking about, what he mentions also in Galatians. In verses 6 through 9 of chapter 1, here we see Paul writing to the churches of Galatia, not just one single church, but the area, the region of Galatia. He says, "I am amazed that you are so quickly deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel, which is really not another, only there are some who are disturbing you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even though we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to that which we have preached to you, let him be accursed. As we have said before, so I say again, now if any man is preaching to you a gospel contrary to what you have received, let him be accursed." So here he's talking about the churches of Galatia turning from what they had learned. And looking at some of the timelines, we can see that Galatians was written somewhere about 53 to 56 A.D. And if you consider, when did Christ start preaching? A.D. 33 or such, like that, and getting all the churches established and Paul's missionary journeys. And then you see at this time when it was written, about A.D. 53 to 56, how many years had passed since then? Just like 20 years. And they had already turned from the truth. They had witnessed the miracles. They had witnessed the actuality of Jesus himself. And yet, they're amazed at how they turn. So it's reasonable to understand that they lacked the knowledge because they weren't studying as they should. They weren't practicing what they saw. They weren't going by the standard set forth through the apostles and what they had of the written word. And the same idea in the old law. What did they refer to? The miracles coming out of Egypt, what God had done for them, to remember those things. And they also had forgotten that idea. So we can see both in the New and Old Testament the similarities, and how the Old Testament becomes our schoolmaster because it teaches things and principles of God, His love, mercy, His judgments that were upon those people and the mistakes that they made. And as we all know, it's always better to learn from somebody else's mistakes than to do them yourself. So that's a principle that we need to look at as we have the perfect before us through the Word. We have the things we can read about through the apostles and their miracles. And yet, I mean, today is just outlandish the way that people teach and going away from the standards set before them. And they need to understand that. Also in Judges, the second chapter, turning back again to an example in the old law, same type of idea. Let's see here. As you can see, in Judges, the second chapter, verses 11 through 19. Here he's talking about the judgment of God that is to be coming to them. He says, "Then the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them and bowed themselves down to them. Thus they provoked the Lord to anger. So they forsook the Lord and served Baal and the Ashtaroth. And the anger of the Lord burned against Israel. And he gave them into the hands of plunderers who plundered them. And he sold them into the hands of their enemies around them, so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. Wherever they went, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord had spoken and as the Lord had sworn to them, so that they were severely distressed. Then the Lord raised up judges who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them. And yet they did not listen to them in their judges, for they played the harlot after other gods and bowed themselves down to them. They turned aside quickly from the way in which their fathers had walked, and obeying the commandments of the Lord, they did not do as their fathers. So here again, the same idea. And also in verse 19, it says, "But it came about when the judge died, that they would turn back and act more corruptly than their fathers, in following other gods to serve them, and bow down to them. They did not abandon their practices of their stubborn ways." So here we can see the people, naturally, it seems like they were just stubborn. They were just against any type of law. They just wanted the freedom to do what they wanted to. And when the judges came help them get back to the open road, to the proper way, they lived for a while. And then when the judges died, they once again turned from their ways. We see the judges taught, I think, from something around 1380 B.C. to 1045 B.C., some 335 years. And during the time of the judges, we see that cycle going again and again. And the time of the prophets, we see the cycle going again and again. The kingship of Israel, we had good kings and bad kings, and again, it just went around and around this cycle. And today also, the same idea. The minor prophets spoke some 500 years from 930 B.C. to about 400 B.C. And as I stated, they came up as the prophets to tell the people, to call them back to doing the proper thing. And they would for a while with some of the prophets, and then they would again turn away. The kingship at the time wasn't fulfilling what they should, although some of the kings were proper in helping them to come around to God, tearing down the altars and such. One of them, Josiah, was a good king, and some of the other ones that did properly. But we see the main thing, I think, in looking at the old law as our schoolmaster, something to look towards. We always see that God cared for his people. He taught them, he disciplined them, he forgave them, and it's a cycle that continues on. In Hebrews, the 12th chapter, we find this idea of the discipline of the Lord in Hebrews 12, verses 1 through 11. I don't think I'll read the whole thing. Here's verses that I'm sure that we're all familiar with in Hebrews. At this time, Hebrews, the 12th chapter, 1 through 11. After going through the examples of the faithful ones of old, such as Moses and Abraham, we see the Hebrew writer stating in verse 1, "Therefore, because of all these things that they had witnessed, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you may not grow weak and lose heart. You have not resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin. And you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons." Here referring to Job in the Old Testament, saying, "My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives." And the writer continues saying, "It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons, and for what son is there whom the father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. So we not so much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live. For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. So here we can see him talking about discipline, the things that we can look, the things the New Testament Christians could look back on in the old law, and God disciplining them, and God forgiving them, and giving them a way to once again come to him, because God was always looking towards that remnant that we find, and Jesus coming from that idea. So the discipline that we can see, the discipline that we acknowledge ourselves, is something that is to build people up, give them endurance to last for it. And there's so many ways of discipline, and we see God throughout the Old Testament disciplining people in many different ways, from natural catastrophes to building up countries that would come upon Israel, such as the Assyrian and Egyptians, and they could read that and see what is going on. And in our own lives, I think we see this also with our children, spouses, family, co-workers, the instruction that needs to be given for forgiveness, the knowledge that we can gain, or we can give knowledge. And all this is based on one thing I'm sure we're all familiar with, communication. Communicating, even with your spouse and stuff. It's like, remember the vows you took? You know, you're not doing it right, you know. You know, that's what the prophets did to the people. Oh, like, see the word here? You guys need to go back to this. Children also, you know, we can do that. You can learn this way. In our families, our co-workers, giving them instruction that we can forgive one another. And you're not going to be able to do that without the proper communication. Hebrews, the first chapter, another familiar verse to us. Starting in verse 1 of Hebrews, the first chapter. God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and in many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world. And he is the radiance of his glory and the exact representation of his nature, and upholds all things by the word of his power. When he had made the purification of sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. So here we can see this idea. When it says God, and he spoke, he communicated. He communicated through his direct instructions to Adam, Abraham, instructed Moses, like through the burning bush. He instructed them through the written word. He instructed them the mouth of the prophets, the judges. Instructed them through the word of Christ. Instructed us through the apostles and the written word, which that which is perfect, everything we need is written down for us to learn from. And the only way we can learn and receive that knowledge is to study it and to look at it and to abide with one another to build it up. So we can see that as God spoke, we can learn from that. And then in Romans, the 8th chapter, I think, again, verses that we are all pretty familiar with. Paul here teaching in Romans, the 8th chapter, something that I think we could look to the old law and see this. We can look through the new law and see this also. Here he speaks in starting in verse 31 of Romans, the 8th chapter. He says, "What shall we say then to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how will he not also with him freely give us all things? Who will bring a charge against God's elect? God is the one who justifies. Who is the one who condemns? Christ Jesus is he who died, yes, rather who was raised, who is at the right hand of God, who also intercedes for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? Just as it is written, for thy sake we are being put to death all day long. We were slaughtered as sheep to be slaughtered. We were considered as sheep to be slaughtered. But in these things we overwhelmingly conquered through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. Yet, what do we find through the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament? The people separating themselves from God. And who is the one that separated them? The people separated themselves. God never separated them. He punished them. He judged them. He gave them the discipline they needed, but he never separated himself from us. He's always been there, and he still is. And that's what we can learn from the Old Testament as a schoolmaster, not to return to the evil ways, as is mentioned, but to always look toward his word and see the schoolmaster, the tutor of the old law. So people, when you talk about, why do we look at the old law? Why is it even in the Bible? Why do we study it? And that's the reason, because we learn so much from what God did at that time to help his people, to discipline his people, and to communicate with his people. Like I said at the beginning, I'm sure many of us can remember some point in our lives, things that went on, whether their job or education. So I'm going to share some things with you. The schoolmaster. If you don't know, I'm was a trained welder on aircraft for 40 some years. Welded on different types of aircraft, from the space shuttle on down. But yet, when I was learning to weld long ago, my teachers, the schoolmaster, he was a pipe welder from Oklahoma. And the difference between a pipe welder and somebody that does aerospace is, the pipe welder might be working on quarter-inch steel. You know, for me, heavy material was like 30 thousandths. You know, that would be heavy material, not counting the titanium at 12 thousandths. So a big difference. I brought some stuff from work to the school at Fullerton College to practice on it and such. My teacher got there. Oh, tried to strike an arc with the TIG torch, blew a hole that big in a piece, you know. That's what he was used to doing, you know. But what he could still teach, even though he wasn't practiced. And that idea of what happened, you know, first thing you learn is, if you're going to play with fire, you're going to get burned. You know, that's obviously. If you don't ground your parts properly with the electricity, you're going to get shocked. If you don't have the proper wire you're using, the parts will fail. In fact, I forget when it was, one of the shuttle launches was delayed because of a part we had welded at work that they thought was the wrong material. The very end of the external tank, where it turns around and pumps the pressure into the external tank to push the oxygen through, they thought it had a defect, stopped the whole launch process to check out these parts and all our parts that we had. And they found that we had pretty good records of what happened. But there again, using the proper wire, and that comes with using the proper blueprints, learning how to read blueprints and stuff. Those of you who are involved in that, there's many different types. And also the revisions of the blueprints. We find that in the Bible, the revision from the old law to the new law. It's been revised. It's changed. We have that in our industry also. Due to heat treating capabilities or strength of different metals, things would change. They would design a part, test it, and it failed. They might redesign it with some different material and come out with a different revision on a blueprint. So if you don't have the right communication, the right and proper example, you're going to fail. And all these things you can learn from the schoolmaster, even though he wasn't, it wasn't the same exact thing, it was something that we could learn. I'm sure all of you who've gone through training, Phil and such, remember times of people training them to do things, but not the specifics, which comes from the knowledge that we learn and the actions that we take. It's in law enforcement stuff. Everybody sometimes has a different aspect of it. My brother was talking to yesterday, he retired from the sheriff's department, and was talking about one of the motorcycle policemen that was under him, and how they mainly give out tickets, and this one officer, he said, gave out too many tickets. He told him, back off a little bit, give people a break sometimes. You know, everybody else is writing 20 and 30 tickets a day, and he was writing up 60 tickets a day. You know, so in some cases it's like everybody's a little different in the things they do, but we can learn the basics from the proper schoolmaster. We see that in the New Testament, the apostles, those who wrote the Gospels, they all had a little different perspective of the things that they saw and the things that they heard from Jesus Christ. And we also can learn from that. As I stated, many times we go through safety equipment at our jobs and proper use of it. We see that in the New Testament, talking about in a spiritual sense, the helmet, the shield, and all these things. And they have to be used properly. Remember in the class when I taught the junior high kids, a shield doesn't do any good if you're holding it like this. Because you have a shield, but it's not going to work unless you cover yourself with it. Same thing with a helmet. It's not going to work unless you wear it properly. Certain aspects of our personal safety devices, whether it's something that we breathe, you have to use it in a proper way. You can't simply go out there just flashing things around. So we can learn from the schoolmaster, you know, Old Testament, the things that people did to help. And we learn that in our everyday life, things that we have, things that we might teach our children. And we can always see that in the old law, people using the proper things, mainly the Word of God, the things that He gave to us. So when you consider the old law, the new law, the schoolmaster, the revisions, helps us understand why we study the old law, I think, and can put us in a perspective of this is what happened. It's not the exact same thing now. It's a shadow maybe of what it was, but it's something that's going to come about, because one of the main things we learn from the Old Testament is God keeps His promises. God instructs us how to behave. He forgives us when we ask for it and do the proper thing. So just remember that. Many times during sermons, they refer to the old law, refer to the minor prophets or the judges, and it's good for us to get an idea of what is talked about many times in the perspective of that. So thank you for your attention. Mike should be back next week to continue on in the classes that he had on for John, and I will continue Wednesday picking up our class on the minor prophets. So thank you very much.